And there is no doubt that the road to hell, personally and socially, is paved not so much with good intentions as with the adoption of attitudes and undertaking of actions that inescapably disturb your conscience. Welcome back to Bookwave, the book club podcast. I'm your host, Scott, joined today, as usual, by William.
Hey.
Pat.
Hey.
And Jason.
Hey, it's my great pleasure to be back here.
Beautiful. Today we're looking at rules 5 and 6 of Jordan Peterson's Beyond Order, 12 More Rules for Life. Do not do what you hate and abandon ideology. But my first question to the group and to anybody else listening at home is, who else got really upset? Who else Googled flipchart derogatory and got really upset about it afterwards? Let's start with you, Pat.
I actually heard the term sometime last year when I read Jonathan Haidt's The Coddling of the American Mind, and he provided other examples of it, and I was genuinely confused by what he meant by that, and I wasn't really triggered by it. I was just, you know, really confused by it and kind of curious, and after reading it all, I thought, yeah, that's stupid. I moved on to the next thing. So
yeah, for me, yeah, it was more of a feeling of like disappointed and concerned. I was like, oh, this is actually the world we live in. Damn it.
I was a little confused by it too. Like, what exactly is derogatory about it?
So because it uses a lot of the letters that are associated with the ethnic group of Filipinos.
Yeah.
So it's just an arrangement of letters?
Yeah. So yeah.
Yeah, it's a derogatory term that was used historically to demean Filipino people.
Allegedly.
Allegedly. Yeah. Like, who's to say for sure, right?
So what does that also mean for flip-flops?
Exactly. Yeah. And flippant.
Yeah, or flippers.
And he brings it up in the beginning of Rule 5. Yes, he's describing a client who the HR department is basically spending an inordinate amount of time over this term of what they should call a flip book or like a whiteboard.
Yes. Because the term flip is far too racist for any office environment.
And you know what? I think that makes sense. I think we can all see how terrible the word is, right? Like,
I mean, this is just kind of typical of a work environment where they don't have actual work to do, so they start thinking of other things.
Well, I think that's what happens. Like, I remember at the factory I worked at, they had a Kaizen program, and I think that if you don't have much to actually improve, the Kaizen program kind of turns into this thing where you're trying to create suggestions so that you can get paid for your contribution and get the pat on the back. And, you know, it just becomes a statistic that's measurable and you can fall victim to that.
Yeah. I think that's a good point of like how all of this PC culture got started. Just like, well, there must be something we could go after, right? Like, there's got to be something wrong with some of the language that we're using. Like, this word must have been racist at some point, right? Let's just do the right thing and stop using that word, and don't realize that they're doing a lot of irreparable damage to the English language by just throwing out a huge chunk of it like that.
I don't want to get stuck on this rabbit hole for much longer than this, but I will say this is a prime example of, you know, these justice warriors that are like, oh, we need to be allies, but they never go to the culture and say, hey, how can we help? They're just like, oh, this is what they need. It's like, did you ask the Filipino people if they were all right with the term? Because I didn't, and I didn't see that study, but that happens all over the place. But that's not the point. And I don't like this conversation. The point of this rule is to not do what you hate.
Yes. And that's one of the first big points that we should make was, while I was reading the chapter titled, Do Not Do What You Hate, Jordan Peterson offered an instruction to do something that I hate, and I didn't realize it was a trap until afterwards. it's actually too perfect. He said, don't do what you hate, and then, you know, if you're doing what you hate, you're going to Google flip chart derogatory. But if you're not doing what you hate, you're just going to continue reading this book and enjoying life. So I think there's a good life lesson in there, in between the lines of what he actually wrote there.
Right.
This chapter was really quick too, though. Like,
it was.
There's not too many stories you have to really tell to explain to the people not to do what they hate.
Mm-hmm. And like, the one part of it is he offers like kind of a tool, because, you know, sometimes you just can't just up and stop doing everything that you hate, but you have to put yourself in a position where you're able to say no, which is the first step. You can't accomplish anything without putting yourself in that position. If you can't say no, then you're just going to keep doing what you hate without having a choice of whether or not to do it. And then he says, you know, saying it once doesn't really make a difference. Twice, you might start to notice. Three times is when you establish a pattern, and then it becomes possible to actually start correcting your bad behaviors. At least that's how I got that. At least that's what I got from it.
Yeah, that there's a quote that he mentions, and it kind of gives a short explanation of that. And it's, he says, we do the things we do because we think those things are important compared to all the other things that could be important. When we are called upon to do things that we find hateful and stupid, we are simultaneously forced to act contrary to the structure of values motivating us to move forward and protecting us from confusion and terror. So that's kind of the reason why this whole flip chart derogatory thing, you know, I mean, that's a good example of it, just because many of us are afraid to be, not to be, but a lot of us are afraid to offend a lot of people, especially from their country of origin. And we just tend to stop and think, okay, what does this mean exactly? And then we create our own disguise of that word or whatever it might be, you know, in order to, you know, follow whatever plan or whatever schematic, whatever kind of outline we have to follow. And even though deep down we hate it, we just have to, you know, sometimes we accept it by default. And when we do that, we forget about speaking out about, you know, what this actually does to us.
It's almost like we don't accept it. It's just already somehow become accepted in us. And you don't even notice when it got accepted. But after a while, you know, if you actually turn around and take a look at what you're doing, you're like, wait a second, this is awful and I hate it. And I don't know how I'm abiding this and how this became a part of my life. But in reflection, I see this isn't working for me at all. But the thing that he did in this chapter was, after the flip chart thing, he talked about how she turned it around and she went to a different place and she started fighting actively this PC culture, and started by doing, I think, workshops about how the different learning types is just made up, not backed up by actual studies. And so she started producing information about that. And I found that was an interesting, I guess, story to highlight in this chapter.
Yeah.
And I find Jordan Peterson's been doing some interesting choices of highlighting interesting stories that are freaking frictiony.
Yeah, well, learning at the same style. Time, at the same time, it's like, that's Jordan Peterson's story. Like, he blew up. He became internet famous because of Bill C-16 up here in Canada saying, like, defending free speech. Like, that's what his whole story was in the beginning, was defending free speech, not enforced speech, you know? And then this individual is in the exact same position, in which they're given a choice of, you know, sit back and do nothing, Like, it's not that hard to just say easel pad instead of flip chart, but it goes against everything that really matters. Like, it just takes little steps for you to forsake yourself before you don't even care who you are anymore. You take away our language, you get into some 1984 type business.
And it reminds me so much a little bit with George Carlin too, because he was a big fan of words and the English language, and he wrote a book about different words that have been expanded or, you know, added on. That was the case, you know, just to avoid being offended, really. So he pretty much explained some words and then just questioned it all the time.
I think, it is easy to say easel pad or flip chart. It's easy to not be offended. It's easy to change the label that you're using, because that's like we've been changing and getting rid of words and finding words outdated and growing into new meanings of words and just literally deciding that a word doesn't mean what it means anymore and it means something else for hundreds and thousands of years. But I think it's the arbitrary, like, enforcement of change that isn't backed by the majority, but is just simply presented by a small group of individuals who happen to have policy behind them and are able to enforce this unnecessary thing on, like, a workforce of 1,000 people, for example. And it's just like, well, why are we expending that energy there? But I think that in the first book, and maybe I'll just have to go back and read the first 12 rules again. I felt like he was giving more stories and psychological background for the rules, but this one, like you said, he's getting more into that sort of fight mode where he's like calling stuff out through the rules. And that's an approach. Then the other thing he does near the end is he qualifies what you're allowed to hate, right? He says you're not allowed to hate getting up early in the morning, or that you have to drive to work, or that you have to, I don't know, there was like five or six different things that he was like, this isn't the job. And that you're not allowed to consider that this is against your conscience because you have to get up early and you have to go to work.
Yeah, I felt like that little section was just him like covering all of his bases. Like, let's be clear here. I'm not saying stop driving to work in the morning because you hate waking up at 6 a.m. That's not what we're talking about here. Getting up at 6 a.m. doesn't denigrate who you are as a human being. That's something that, is tedious and annoying. It might suck, but you can't say you hate it. It's not the same thing. That those emotions aren't coming from the same place.
Well,
Yeah,
no, and it.
he refers to it as a refusal of the call of consciousness when it comes to that example.
And it's like, look, if you hate getting up early in the morning, that's fine, but you need to provide an income and you need to carry a burden that's big enough for you and not too small and not too big. And hopefully make it work in a way that eventually you can position yourself to not have to wake up early, or I don't know, change your perspective and come to terms with the fact that there's the same amount of hours in every single day and you can just sleep at a different time.
Speaking of sleeping in.
Abandon the ideology of you're an adult, so you get to stay up till midnight. And
Or that you're not a morning person.
that too. Like, you can change these little things. You
They're
can't.
so
That's
huge.
yeah.
That section where he was saying not to hate, waking up early and making your bed and those kinds of necessities in life reminded me of Marcus Aurelius's Meditations, a very stoic philosophy of there are things you need to do. Don't go about life crying about the things you need to do. And if waking up early is something you truly hate, consider, finding an occupation where you don't necessarily have to wake up at 5 in the morning or 4 in the morning.
Or if it's an option, ask for the night shift. They usually pay more for the graveyard shift anyway, right?
Yeah, and I think he also talks in this chapter that it's worth, you know, 3 years of suffering to find the job that's the right fit than just accepting a job that you hate that doesn't work and you do for 40 years.
True.
Well, moving on, rule number six.
In rule number six, I don't know. It reminded me a lot of our last conversation about, the difference between ideals and goals and aims and, the look at your ideal self and the ideal figure. Because he mentioned a lot to, abandon ideology, but it also kind of sounded like he was trying to evangelize a couple people out there. Like Christianity is a far better option than your own twisted ideology.
Yeah,
Yeah, it's like mixed messaging.
I got a really mixed response from this kind of rule too, because you can create anything and it can become an ideology, you know, if there's enough work into it.
Like
And
my biggest problem with watching atheists and Christians debate each other on YouTube is that both sides are possessed by ideology. I don't think the whole Christian ideal is exclusive to, not having an ideology. It's just a different one.
yeah, it's see, this is an opportunity for us to abandon language again. Like, I propose we come up with a whole different set of words, because ideology and ideals and ideologues have been really run out these past few years.
Yeah, but I feel like he's really trying to like cut the difference between the two. And like going back to the last chapters, I was arguing that Jordan Peterson was presenting Jesus as an ideal, and you guys argued against me saying, well, he's obviously saying ideal means something that you've assigned for yourself, like your own goal and aim. But has your
It's
perspective changed since reading this chapter?
well, I think I'd like to change the instructions, and I think what I'd prefer to hear is, like, you know, find an ennobling ideal that you'd like to live up to and be willing to abandon ideology when it restricts your existence.
So when you restrict, as in when there's a rule that you see is kind of over the top, or if it's being broken many times,
Well, it's
you
like
should
we were
abandon.
talking about just a minute ago, you know, that whole do not do what you hate. Like, if your ideals are putting you into a rock and a hard place, like, you shouldn't feel bound to your ideals if they go against your conscience. And so just that shift of be willing to abandon ideology, but that doesn't mean that you shouldn't consider different ideologies and pursue, you know, the highest value in your life. But maybe that's just me not understanding the word ideology.
Well, there's something that I've picked up on, and that is there's a section called resentment, and an interesting quote from that is this: resentment occurs when individual f failure or insufficient status is blamed both on the system within which that failure or lowly status occurs, and then on the people who have achieved success and higher status within that system. I don't know what you think about that.
Yeah, I thought his inclusion of resentment was really important in this chapter because essentially the word means that which I do not want to happen, and it is happening, and now I'm angry about this. And it kind of is connected to ideology because that I and that want of what you want to happen, it's a certain idea, an ideal. So if for example, guys help me come up with an example of an ideal, and then we'll move on.
Marcus Aurelius, or Jesus Christ. The archetype of the perfectly generous man. I don't
Good
know.
Samaritan.
Yeah, the Good Samaritan.
Okay, so if you can't meet that ideal, you're going to resent yourself possibly, and you're going to become potentially angry. And this could happen on all different kind of layers. It could be that you resent society itself. Go ahead, Will.
I just had the perfect example. So this is what happens to Anakin when he can't live up to the ideal of being a Jedi. I'm not the Jedi I'm supposed to be, and I'm angry about it, and I want power.
Yeah, well, the Jedi Master, right? Because he deserves to be a Jedi Master as far as he can tell, but, you know, Mace doesn't want to give him the seat on the... doesn't even want to give him the seat on the council, but he thinks he deserves everything, and his only concern is to live up to the what they expect of him, because they all think he's this chosen one, right? And he's proving himself on the battlefield, but not really in the social sphere.
And so you could have, you know, you're living in this ideal, this world full of ideals. And if you can't meet those requirements, you know, you're going to not necessarily enjoy your time here on Earth. So what choice are you left with other than to, you know, go down the road of nihilism or adopt something in between?
Right.
Yeah. And so, like, I don't think he was necessarily saying adopt Christianity in this, but he is saying that it does provide a framework for meaning in life. Even if you don't believe it 100%, you can still act as if you're your own hero. You know, don't have resentment against yourself.
Yeah, and all these labels that we hear nowadays, like, you know, bitterness, oppression, equality, all that. He mentions that those concepts are low resolution and they can mean anything, which is why I really don't like to put labels on anything. I mean, I think the best way to learn about someone or a concept is if you just take the time to actually learn about it instead of just printing a label on them automatically.
In this chapter, he brings up Nietzsche, I believe, and the idea of the Übermensch, the Superman. I think I mispronounced that.
The Übermensch.
Thank you. And kind of in contrast to that is maybe the idea of Jesus Christ, you know, the Savior. So maybe you don't have to.
Same.
See, like,
in parallel,
this is a thing that I think Jordan Peterson, like, when I listen to Jordan Peterson talk about Nietzsche and then I read Nietzsche, it's not the same thing at all. Like, we're reading two different things, Jordan Peterson and I think, because for the amount that he mentions Nietzsche, he doesn't ever talk about paganism or Dionysus, because Nietzsche just won't shut up about that stuff. He calls himself the Antichrist, and Jordan Peterson uses everything he says to support Christianity. It's really confusing, and I don't know, like, how to make heads or tails of it. But, like, the Übermensch is definitely not Jesus Christ. Like, Jesus took on all the sins of the world and died for humanity. The Übermensch tries to take over the world and takes all that power for himself. And Jesus didn't care about power. His will to power, his drive to power was at zero. So he got all of it. Like, everybody knows who Jesus Christ is, and everyone's afraid to talk about Friedrich Nietzsche.
What Jason was saying, contrast, not parallel. So you're agreeing with Jason.
Yeah, maybe.
I think, right, Jason? Like,
you can't use both, though. Like, you have to either be going for the Übermensch or emulating Jesus. They can't be beside each other. They're basically polar opposites.
That's what I was trying to demonstrate there.
Yeah. So they could both fit in that same position, that same pedestal, that same ideal, but fundamentally you got two different ideologies, two different religions on your hand. Like one is a worshiper of the god Dionysus, and one just wants to be like Jesus.
Well, admittedly, I don't know much about Nietzsche's Superman or Jesus Christ, but the thing that stood out to me in this chapter is this idea of imitating the hero. So even if you can't be that hero, you could imagine, it's kind of like the saying, what would Jesus do, right? You know, imagine what you would do if you didn't like hate the world.
Yeah. I think most of this chapter was basically just, I think a better title for this chapter would be Don't Be a Nihilist rather than Abandon Ideology. I think that's honestly what he's saying. Like, that wasn't even a joke.
It's still funny.
Yeah.
Is this the one where he was talking about, like, the punk metal bands, and it's like, oh, you're singing about how you hate everything, but you're tapping your foot and you clearly enjoy the music, so how much do you really hate the world? It's like, that was funny.
Yeah. Well, that could also lead to just the melodies, just liking the melodies.
But it is clear that, like, prevalent throughout all these chapters, Jordan Peterson keeps coming back to this core message of you should be a member of the force for good that is making the world a better place. And he's got a mythology of his own creation that he's sort of
putting together,
out, hinting at, or alluding to.
I think this is like, this mythology that you're talking about is one that he's trying to, I don't know if this is the right word, but almost impose on the world. Like he says, abandon ideology, aim for the good. But the good that you are to aim for was decided by the Bible and Christianity. So,
well, no,
I don't
he
know
says
what to do about that.
Like, the Mercury notes that he has, you know, and talking about that natural will to things that you enjoy and doing the things that you're drawn to. And that's where you'll find meaning and fulfillment in life. I think that that's a pretty non-denominational lifestyle, yeah,
that's
an,
like,
existential value system.
That's like something Joseph Campbell would say. And I've also heard Jordan Peterson say he doesn't like Joseph Campbell's formulation. Like when Joseph Campbell says, follow your bliss, that's never been enough for Jordan Peterson. He mentioned that
said the exact same thing. Jordan Peterson says the exact same thing. That's the same concept with the Mercury thing and the follow your bliss. So
I understand that, you. Did weird. You? Did anybody else watch the last podcast with Akira? Akira the Don and Jordan Peterson?
I did see that, yeah.
Because he brought that up, and Akira actually said that to Jordan. He said, I think that's a lot of things that people misunderstand about Joseph Campbell. And then, like, Jordan cut him off and said, no, I think they're right when, you know, Joseph Campbell says, follow your bliss, that's not enough. So, I don't know. I agree with you guys when you said at the beginning, we're getting mixed messages from the guy.
Yeah, I need to look at that. I need to figure out what they mean by that. I have to watch that.
Mm-hmm. He talks about, like, low resolution ideas in these two rules. And I think the idea of let's make the world a better place might be a low resolution idea. And it might just be a symptom of making yourself a better person. Because one of the things that I pick up on his message is if you make yourself a better person, a natural byproduct of that is you being a node in this world, the world will become a better place through your betterment or through your better actions.
Mm-hmm.
Provided you better yourself in the capacities that are deemed appropriate and considered bettering by this belief system and framework that we should not have, and also we should abandon, but we should aim at.
What is moral?
I don't think there's an answer to that question. Jeez, what is moral?
That's subjective.
What is God?
Yeah.
What is ethic?
Again, that's another rabbit hole we don't need to go down to if you don't want to.
I think it's worth exploring, but
yeah,
like, I don't know. That's as deep as my hole goes.
Yeah.
I'm trying to figure it out, but I don't think I've gotten any further than I have.
I'm still figuring out too.
Yeah.
So
I'm not any further than I was.
Don't harm others. Do not steal. Do not destroy. Not murder.
So if we're to abandon ideology, are the 24 rules an ideology? That's another question we have to explore right there. Like, is he saying abandon your ideology for my ideology?
I think he's saying if you're alive, you're going to find yourself having to make choices. You have to have some kind of aim or forward trajectory. And that means having like a personal ideology. Do you want to hurt yourself, or do you want to, live a life where you can, you know, walk around and eat food and wake up basically straightening your life up? Or are you going to live this life resentful for life itself and just, you know, never clean your room, put drugs in your body because they make you feel good in the moment? This list could go on and on for.
Yeah.
Are you meant to do what you're supposed to do?
Where did you get concept of supposed to do from? I would begin by asking.
Okay.
I think
be an ideology, right?
It's the question everybody asks. You know, what am I supposed to do today? Or what am I supposed to do with my life? Maybe they never say it out loud to themselves, or maybe they delude themselves or try to hide from that question itself.
I don't think it's ever, what am I supposed to do? I think everyone knows what they're supposed to do. I think it's more or less, why am I supposed to do, right? It's like, you can ask anybody in any circumstance that has a mentally sound mind. They know what they need to do to clean up their life. They're fully aware of at least the first thing that needs to happen. And they engage in self-deception, like John Verveke's been talking about in the Awakening from the Meaning Crisis series that we've been watching or listening to, right? Like, you know what you need to do, but you're good at and clever enough to convince yourself that you may not have to do it right away, and you might not have to engage in the true probability of the circumstance by getting so narrowly focused in on right now I can just satisfy myself and sacrifice my future.
Yeah, because that's easy to do.
I think you're onto something, Will. The question isn't what, it's why. Why should I get up early? Why should I not drink this second glass of whiskey? Why should I not smoke this next cigarette? Or, you know, insert your vice.
Yeah, and to which I would propose that you abandon the why and the should and the suppose, and you ask yourself what it is that you enjoy doing and how you can position yourself to perpetuate that enjoyment and fulfillment of your life for the most amount of decades you can get away with. And you may find that the only answer to how do I sustain the enjoyment of my life is to be a positive impact to the society that you're in and to treat yourself as healthily as possible, and that there are a very limited set of tools that allow you to do those things, and that's exercise and community service and drinking 8 glasses of water a day and going to bed early and getting up early and breathing fresh air and not getting drunk and not being sober for your whole life and having moderation and balance and studying and growing and suffering and facing the suffering. And
yes, but what about, this is a bit of a sidestep, but what about when you ask someone, you know, what do you think you should be doing? and their answer that they give you is not the same answer that they give themselves. Like, oh, what's my goal? End racism on Twitter.
It's like, well, that's stupid. Yeah, congratulations, you're dissociated from your real life, and you know, you've created this giant existential blanket that you're pretending that is your problem. And it's like, no, get real, get back to reality. What do you actually need to do? Because you're not the Ubermensch, and you're not going to end racism on Twitter because you can't control other people's behaviors. So what are you going to do with your behaviors that isn't BS?
Yeah, and it goes back to his mentioning of the different concepts that are so resolution. I mean, end racism. I mean, sure, that's a good thing, but that's very vague.
Like, you could create a seminar that you publish on Twitter that brings clarity and attention to a facet of racist inadvertent happenings that, if someone were to read, would inform them and better themselves. But, like, is that what you want to do? Because, I'm going to need more. I'm going to need a bit of a background. We're going to have to do a bit of an intake.
Well, trying to get into, like, the same kind of, you know, getting into the ideologies that we're supposed to abandon. Like, just using PC social justice warrior as one example. And how do you help that person say, like, you know, maybe your goal isn't to just scream at people on the internet.
Well, it's like, so here's the data that you're going to need at least to get that medium resolution. It's like, okay, are you an adult? Are you providing for yourself? Are you a burden to other people that you're dependent on? Or do you have dependents that you are, like, carrying and that you need to support? Because ending racism on Twitter isn't paying the mortgage, and it isn't filling the pantry, and it's not putting gas in the Civic.
Yeah, but those are never going to be points enough to, you know, convince someone that ideology isn't worth clinging to in a way. I think for people like us, it's enough to say, like, hey, be aware that you're falling into ideologies and don't do that. But some people might say, but this ideology is my identity. This is what I feel the world needs, is more people to just fill the archetype of social justice activist. Because that's what the world needs right now. So if that person is fully convinced that the world needs them to be the way they are, and that's making them miserable, then where's the halfway point there?
Yeah, well, and that's, like, the other thing, too, is just ask them, how do you feel about this?
Well, they might feel like an absolute martyr and hero, though. They might be getting so much positive feedback from people that it outweighs all of the negative bullying, and they could actually feel like they're making a difference, but they're just rambling on social media. Which we know doesn't make a difference, but it doesn't matter what we know. It's what they know. And what they know is their own reality. And what they know is that they're making a difference.
Abandon the ideology of we and they. That's too low resolution.
Certainly the world needs things. I think it comes down to the perspective. These kinds of people that you're talking about are, I think, focused on the problems of the world. And I think the change of perspective that would be more helpful is to focus on what it is that you want to do. You don't focus on the ocean of chaos and problems, because it's unending, but you can at least focus on what you want to do in life.
Yeah, like one of the things that you said earlier, Scott, was, like, you know, this flip chart, like, oh, this is the world we live in. And it's like, no, like, if you look at the average, like, living organisms contributing to this planet, like, the world is just water. Like, that's not the world we live in. On average, it's just water. Like, the people complaining about the flip chart are much less than the water on the world. And so if you focus on the flip chart people, it's going to feel terrible. And if you focus on the we's and the they's and the knowings and the unknowings and the convincings, it's like, yeah, you could get lost in it. But You could just as easily get lost in positive data, and there's way more positive data, but it doesn't come out the way that, like, you have to look for it because that's not where it is. It's not on Facebook, because Facebook isn't for your betterment. It is an advertisement platform that is trying to monetize on your existence. And social media has nothing to do with socialization and has everything to do with media.
To be fair, I'm focusing on it because we're recording a podcast on it right now. And I was focusing on it previously because it was the book that we were reading. But
to be fair, I'm not actually just talking to you, right? Yeah, like, I'm talking to the idea at large and the thought pattern at large.
Yeah, but to just add on to that, like, after I read that little bit, and then I went down a rabbit hole for like half an hour, and then I went on the Discord server and said, like, yo, you guys are you guys as mad as I am about this? And you're just like, don't do things you hate. What are you even talking about?
Like,
you're right. You're right. I'm just going to let it go. And I haven't thought about it since, until, you know, a minute before we started recording, and Pat said, hey, didn't this trigger you? And I was like, oh yeah, now I'm mad again. Ready to record. Let's go.
But that's the thing, and it's like a straw man fallacy, right? When we start thinking about social justice warriors that are doing stuff, and it's like, they don't exist. They're not coming to your front door. Like, the war has not started. Like, let's take steps. And, you know, the people that can't provide for themselves are probably not fit to be social justice warriors and aren't going to make an impact. So the ones that are making an impact, maybe we should pay attention to. But I have yet to see any beyond, you know, the ones that are really prominent.
Yeah.
What have they done? They didn't go to school every Friday for a year?
Well, they've canceled some celebrities. That's what they've done.
Oh, no, not the celebrities.
Think of the CEOs.
Not the hedge funds.
Oh, no.
Send them some tendies their way.
Jason, what's on your mind?
Well, I was just thinking about the similarities of these two rules, how if you're focused on ideologies too much, if the ideology you're focused on is we got to end all of the problems in the world, and you're not focused on what you want to do, that you'll end up doing things you hate. So it ties back into rule five. Like, if you're focused on only obtaining money to address the problem of how you're going to feed yourself, how you're going to shelter yourself, you'll most likely end up in a job you don't like doing. Versus if you don't worry about the money and try to find something that you're truly interested in, you'll start off as the beginner, like you talked about in one of the earlier chapters, and hopefully master it because you're genuinely interested in it, and not like these HR people who are just coming up with an endless amount of problems. And these problems are like the Hydra's head. They'll never stop because it gives them a meaning in life to come up and try to slay these Hydras.
Yeah, and it's all about trying to grow as a person, because I recently been just thinking about different ways to build a business, or, you know, sell a novel or anything like that. And it all comes down to using the money as a resource, or using money to buy resources for your company or your business, instead of just thinking, okay, this is how much money I have. Look at me. I'm so good at this, and I'm going to go out and get a Lamborghini with this money. And I guess we can give that example to what we're talking about here, is what do I have around me that can be used to further develop myself and this thing that I'm creating? I think that's something we should pay attention to.
Yeah, like, almost abandon the ideology of what wealth really is and what it means. And You know, it's just goes along with all the things that have been forced along us, like the little habits that we pick up from our parents and everything. Like, there's a way to look at it a little bit differently. Like, everything you do and everything in your life, everyone in your life, there's another perspective there to be seen. Like, money just doesn't have to be the thing that keeps you alive. It can be whatever you really need it to be.
Yeah, of these two rules, the rule five of don't do things you hate, it was kind of one that spoke to me a bit more. I think everybody does things that might not be in their best interest. And if you're only focused on, you know, I can't do this one thing that I might want to do, but maybe it's not good for me. We all know what those things are. You're going to feel maybe a lack of motivation or thrust in life. You're not going to have that dopamine sending you in on a trajectory. But if you change it to, I'm focused on things that improve my well-being, then you can actually get the same dopamine without having to like butt up against your, I guess, your id or your wants. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
I mean, I'm thinking in terms of like, all right, so for drugs, for example, people love to do drugs, but their future self might not like it. They might actually hate doing it. For example, like heroin, it might feel great today, but your future self hates it because eventually it's going to run out, right? But if instead, if you focused on maybe natural endorphins, you know, going for a jog, going for an exercise, you'll still get those things you enjoy, and your future self will also stay happy.
So one of the things that might have been a benefit to us at the start of the recording of this episode was to Google the definition of ideology and to maybe see what definition Jordan Peterson was using, because we, I think, are of the mind that ideology is, of course, the science of ideas, because that's what ology means and that's what idea means. But no, ideology is actually two things most commonly, and there's political ideologies and then there's epistemological ideologies. So you have the four major political ideologies of conservatism, liberalism, libertarianism, populism, or something like that, and then religions. So I think his whole thing was just abandon ideologies in the sense of organized political belief systems and religious systems, not the science of ideas and aiming at ideals.
Huh. Yeah, I agree with that.
And it's like, how do you... What are you saying, Jordan? Abandon the two-party system?
Maybe again, this is just another... me as an atheist, but I really felt like he, like, argued for Christianity a little bit too much for my taste and didn't really explain the pitfalls of, you know, fundamental Christianity as an ideology, like the Westboro Baptist Church with their, you know, God hates gay people signs in much worse language. And like, that's ideology that they get from their religion. So
like, with these two rules, I would almost say that like rule five was actually a commandment, because it wasn't a thing to do, it was a thing to not do. And then the other rule, the abandoned ideology, was like
something to consider.
Something to consider. It wasn't practical, right? Like, it's not stand up straight with your shoulders back. It's not make your bed in the morning. It's not a thing to do. It's not pet a stray cat when you see one. It's not don't stop children from playing when they're skateboarding and getting into trouble. Like, it was a commandment of a very low resolution concept and not a practical thing, like do a gratitude journal.
Yeah. It kind of makes the case that the Ubermensch is impossible and creating your own ideals isn't practical. And then he goes on to say, like, you have to have something to aim at or you're aimless. So like that only leaves a couple options. Like,
if you're watching this, please come on and explain to us what you actually meant.
Yeah. Well, I think if everybody had their own ideals, the world would look like maybe some kind of anarchy, right? So there are societal ideals that we all share, and that's in contrast to complete nihilism. And I think his target audience here is maybe people who are lost. You either can go down the road of nihilism, or a lot of times what happens is these lost people will fall into a church. They'll go into the church because there's community there. Like, you know, it's a small society. And so they have their own ideals in that society. Maybe it's, we'll gather every Sunday, we'll sing, we'll read the Bible together, things like that.
I feel like these two rules were pretty short. I'm saying they were easy to get through.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm looking forward to Jordan Peterson coming on and explaining to us in greater detail.
Please, Jordan, we need you. Like, I felt like going through these books, this was the first time that I'm really like, I don't know if I can get behind what you're saying. Like, everything else has just been like, yeah, that tracks. Stand up straight. Makes sense. Like you were saying, all those other rules had something to them, and then we get like a couple commandments in this book, and
yeah, it's a little chaotic.
To consider, it is. Oh, the other one was very orderly too.
But see, I don't think he's saying you have to, you know, join a church, a Christian church, to find meaning. I think he's just saying that there's a framework there.
But he is saying you can't be an Ubermensch. Like, unless I'm misunderstanding Jordan here.
Like, I'm with him. I'll agree with him there.
I don't know, man. There's an anarchist in me that says
Napoleon was not that great. Okay.
Yeah, but that was the will to power manifesting in the form of I'm going to take over the world, you know? Same with fucking Adolf Hitler. It's... That's the will to...
Triggered.
That's the will to power manifesting as evil. I don't think Friedrich Nietzsche ever made the case that, you know, the will to power had anything to do with evil. In fact, it was beyond good and evil. So, I don't know, for the amount that Jordan cribs Friedrich Nietzsche, it feels like he's like disagreeing with him at every turn and siding with the religious crowd in that fight. Like, he takes his warning seriously, like the whole God is dead, religion is broken. We're not gonna get much further until we're able to fix this.
But it's just like,
but like he
returning
then, like Friedrich Nietzsche says we have to ascend the idea of having this Christianity, slave morality, all of these things weighing us down. And Jordan Peterson is like, no, let's put the genie back in the lamp. Nietzsche accepts the fact that it's broken. Jordan Peterson's trying to glue it back together, and I don't think it's salvageable. Like, there's not going to be a one world religion or anything like that that helps people unite.
That's not the point. It's not going to look like anything that we can picture. And the notion that we already have the solution and returning to it, like, that's regressive, right? Like, we have no new developments for 2,000 years. That's the plan. Like, no, like you're saying, and like Nietzsche was saying, like, we need to transcend it. Right. And if we keep trying to put the fire out, we're not going to get this phoenix to rise from the ashes. We're just going to have this chemical soup of grossness.
Yeah, I think that's also the problem with capitalism. Just to get needlessly political, we gave everyone the gift of individuality, and then they tried to take it away when things started to fall apart. Like, no, we can't just go backwards. We need to use everything from the past. The archaic revival, bring it all back. We can't just forget about Plato. Can't just forget about John Stuart Mill's. We can't just forget about what happened in Soviet Russia. But at the same time, we can't just say, oh, one of those things was right and everything else was wrong, you know, because we're still going to have the same problems of, you know, capitalism doesn't work when half of the people want communism or socialism. The only thing that really matters is that it works for everybody and everyone can agree on it.
Yeah, but what if everybody doesn't agree?
Well, we're not going to be able to agree over, you know.
Well, then they should be made to.
I love you, Will. You're my favorite. I didn't know what you were doing there at the start until, yeah. Two Anakin quotes now. I like it.
I've watched like 8 Star Wars movies in the past 2 weeks.
I'm so proud of you.
That was a good podcast. Let's call it.
Yeah, that's a good place to end. So if you're new around here, make sure you check us out at our website, bookwave.club. We're on YouTube. You can listen to us on all the podcasting platforms from anchor.fm, and may the force be with you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Bye, guys.